listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. This is your host, Zach Gandra. And as always, I am here with the inimitable Steve Gandra.
I just decided that since you're not going to let go of that inimitable word, that from now on, we're going to have only inimitable guests. And
that's right.
We got one coming up
today. We're excited about Scott Harrison. But Steve, by the way, I've been waiting for you all these years as we've been doing this radio show. Well, year. I don't even know when our 1 year anniversary is.
It's been a while.
Have we had it?
I'm not sure, but it's been a while.
It's been scary that you and I would have an anniversary together.
Yeah, it is. And we got a few of them.
But I mean, I've referred to you as the inimitable for quite a while now, and you haven't referred to me as anything.
Well, I'm still trying to come up with the word that will accurately match up to that inimitable word. Yeah, I'm trying. Inimitable means unreplaceable, unique.
Uncopyable.
Yeah, uncopyable. Okay, got it.
You cannot be imitated.
Okay, all right. So why don't we just say uncopyable?
However, I can imitate your throat clearing.
You can. So when we were coming up to the radio station, I cleared my throat and somebody yelled, "Hey, it looks like Zach's here."
Yeah. It sounds like we're at a rodeo and you're whipping a horse.
Is that why your wife says that, the older my husband gets, the more he turns into you?
That's exactly right. it's a scary, scary thing, but yeah, it is. So we have had a stellar year. We're excited with the clients we're working for right now, who shall remain nameless, but we're excited about their progression. I will say, we should mention one, the Coast Real Estate guys.
Yeah, doing a wonderful job.
Doing awesome.
Doing a wonderful job. Yeah,
that's a good group of dudes. And both of the heads of that company have been on the show. Yeah.
Yeah, they have. And well, actually, no, just Sean Hoban.
Oh, Sean has.
Yeah, the COO has been on the show and done a wonderful job. Coast Properties in the Everett area of Seattle, outstanding family biz, almost 500 employees now, growing like crazy. You're still doing a lot of work with the marketing division at Toyota in LA. Got a lot of new projects. I mean, it seems like the longer we're in business, which kind of leads into our guest for today, the longer we're in business, the more we end up doing work for and supporting companies who already have good cultures.
Yeah,
they have good cultures. They recognize the importance and the value of building the right kind of a culture in a business for long-term sustainability and stability. And they're looking to go from good to great.
Yeah, they're the good to great guys.
Yeah, rarely anymore do we have anybody that just says, I have a terrible culture.
Yeah.
And I really want to turn it around, because the guys that have a terrible culture typically don't know their culture is terrible. And they think it's okay.
They think their customers are terrible.
Yeah, they think their customers are their employees.
Yeah.
I spoke to a CEO the other day that that thought their employees were terrible.
Right.
And then we got data and we found out that the terrible one was, the boss.
Oh, I love the phrase, people can lie about numbers, but
numbers never lie about people. So we have Scott Harrison on the show today. Scott is the former CEO of Barclay Dean Office, large successful office products company.
Now OpenSquare.
Yeah, now OpenSquare. He'll tell us a little bit about the merging of the two companies that are now OpenSquare. Scott has just a history of building great cultures with great people at a very high level of performance. And let me say, an excellent culture is not a warm and fuzzy kumbaya kind of an experience.
Right.
An excellent culture, is a Super Bowl team that is highly competitive, on the edge, doing the best of the best, outperforming competitors 2 and 3 to 1, but they're doing it because they have synergy and energy, and it's in their heart, and everybody's pulling together in the same direction, and they've got highly talented people in the right spot doing what they love. And our key operative question in our culture assessment tool is, to describe a culture that's so exciting that you'd wake up 2 hours early every morning, everybody would, and could hardly wait to get to work.
Totally.
So, I mean, Scott's been there, done that, and is, in a new season of their business.
He was a naval officer, too, and he's a diehard Seahawk fan.
Yeah, diehard Seahawk fan. When you have lunch or coffee with a guy who's got a hoarse voice in Seattle on Wednesday, and the Seahawk game was on Saturday or Sunday, you know that this is a diehard Seahawk fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Scott, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I don't know if that's a you know, good thing to be recognized for 5 or 6 days later.
Hey, you know what?
You know, it's kind of like get a life.
Yeah, hey, remember, you know, our motto, you know, Peter Drucker taught us that, that culture eats strategy for breakfast. And Zach just told you our motto a second ago, that people can lie about numbers, but numbers never lie about people.
That's right.
And in Seahawk land, they measure the decibel level of every cheer. And if you're not, you know, over the top, then what's
you're
going
not
on?
Earthquake status.
You know, if you're not earthquake status and you're not a Seahawk fan, and you better stay home and watch it on TV.
I will say this, and Scott, I know you'll echo this, before we get into the actual stuff that's going to help people's lives. It is nice to be in Seattle and to have the rest of the country hate us for once because of our sports teams.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that the truth?
Yeah, it's actually a nice feeling.
Yeah, I think we had a seismic event last Saturday.
We did, yeah.
Our seats were down near the Hawks' nest, and when Lynch made that run there in the fourth quarter, when we hit that high decibel level, well, you could feel that entire infrastructure just shake.
Yeah, it was phenomenal.
Did you bring your Skittles to the game to throw on the field after he scored?
Yeah. Actually, some people next to me, you know, did, and they were throwing a whole bunch of them.
Awesome.
There, so.
You know what? Skittles, if you're listening, your corporation is missing out on the greatest marketing and social media thing you could be using.
Yeah, Skittles.
Seattle fans, with Skittles all over
the
ground.
Yeah, if you haven't signed Marshawn Lynch as your corporate sponsor yet, you know, you need to get after it. So, Scott.
Before we start, I wanted to mention, I'm glad to see you reference the inimitable again. I couldn't remember what we were talking about the last time we chatted, and I certainly didn't know how to spell it, but you were kind enough to throw a little bit of a definition in there today, which really fits.
We didn't want you to have to go to Wikipedia in the middle of the show and lose focus.
Because we know that's a good reliable source for information.
Yeah. Yeah, so Scott, give us some background on, you know, OpenSquare and what formerly was Barclay Dean, your work there, the work that you guys do in the marketplace, how you brought a whole new concept to, you know, the subject of furnishing your office.
Okay. Well, a little bit of history here. For the past year, OpenSquare is a new company, and the new company was formed with the merger of Barclay Dean Interiors, which was the company that I was the principal in and the CEO, and Bank and Office Interiors, with the ownership of Tim Jones and Jeff Rossbon. And both organizations have a long history and a long legacy, you know, here in the Puget Sound area. I think Bank and Office has been here in the marketplace for close to 70 years, and Barclay Dean was in the marketplace for about 65 years. And so there's a lot of similarities in serving similar customers, similar market niches. We had primary manufacturing partners that we utilized and shared together, a basic operating system that both organizations share. So there was a series of synergies that existed, you know, within the operating systems of both organizations. But as we've seen in so many industries, at times it makes sense to, you know, consider some consolidation. And so for the better part of a year, what had been not true competitors, Bank and Office operated in a little bit of a different niche than Barclay Dean, but we still did compete in the marketplace. So it was an interesting opening, if you will, to open up a dialogue and to see would it ever make sense to consider putting the two organizations together. And so one of the things that we were able to do, which was very helpful, before we closed the deal, we probably spent 6-7 months or so with Valerie Schmidt, who was my partner, and then with Tim and Jeff, having a dialogue as to what might be the possibilities. And if we kept this boat going through the water, then how would we want to try and prioritize, and what would be the key issues and the key opportunities that that we would want to address? So fast forward, we just celebrated our first year. We're clear number one in our marketplace, which we're very prideful about in the book of lists. Work very, very hard to gain that kind of recognition and servicing our clients and providing extraordinary service and products and other related services. And you can imagine that even though there was a fair amount of synergies in the operating size of both organizations because of our supplier base, and also a fair amount of synergy in some of the attributes around culture and values, there were some differences too. And so one of the key things that we identified and did it real early on was to use this as an opportunity to really start a new company, if you will. And that was a powerful decision, not to leverage off the name Bank and Office or the name Barclay Dean, but to take a new look. And why would we do that new look? To create something new, more powerful, make it where one and one is certainly equal to more than three or four. And to do that, to step back and really look at, you know, the vision, mission, values, operating norms, and the culture, and to do that as a new entity. And that's what we spent a fair amount of time on, and I think we can share some more specifics on our talk today.
You know, I've been popping around on the website, the Open Square, which is open-sq.com, and, you know, it is scientifically proven that workspace does affect how people work. And your guys' stuff is absolutely creative and clean and sharp and nice. It's looking good.
Well, if your goal is to have a workforce that is creative, clean, well-organized, focused, and productive, you better be talking to these guys because they know how to create an environment that produces that kind of a culture.
Yeah.
But we're going to have Scott talk to us about some of the other elements. And it's interesting that you talk about how, you know, now that you've got a little time under your belt in the merger between two cultures that have become now, you know, a combination and a third culture, you know, lots of folks never even pay attention to culture when they look to do an acquisition or a merger. You know, typically folks find out all of the problems of the dirty laundry about 3 to 4 months after the deal is done. And they're typically not that happy with what took place. But you guys seem to have really, you know, done your homework and gotten things going right. And it's evident by the level of performance of the firm after the merger as well as before.
Right. Well, I think, Steve, to build on that, again, there was this common aspect in history of the products and some of the related services that both organizations took to the marketplace for literally for decades. And we all know that when mergers and affiliations and partnerships take place, that really the commanding component, if you will, that will ultimately lead to success or failure really comes back to the people and how do people operate, how they interface with each other, you know, what are some standard norms, the softer side of the business, which turns into be a real driver as far as effectiveness. And so I think, you know, the team of the four executives, and then we were able to open it up to additional leadership involvement during this process, even before the deal was closed, had us focus as much on the softer part, if you will, as the numbers and the clients and the markets and things like that. And we really started with a look that said the vision, the mission, the values, and the norms really drive culture. And both organizations, again, somewhat similar, but we had different visions and different mission statements and some different values and operating norms. So that was a place where we put a lot of energy behind with great listening sessions and a process that we followed, like I say, every bit as important as any product or service element of the acquisitions. And two things kind of right now stick out in my mind as to what we did up front with that. And one was a commitment of leadership that was only going to work and only have real teeth if, in fact, Tim and Jeff and Valerie and myself and the rest of our combined leadership teams really believed that this was not just worthwhile, but it was a must for organizational success and for prosecuting a business model. And so we all pricked our finger and held ourselves accountable for that kind of sponsorship from a leadership position. And another thing that we did is we have a gentleman here at the company, Scott Davis, who has a background in ISO 9000, Malcolm Baldrige, TQM, and we made a strategic hire to bring Scott on board, and his sole purpose was to act as the facilitator and the tour guide, if you will, through this labyrinth of change and the articulation of a revitalized vision, mission, values, and norms. And that kind of made all the difference in the world about keeping both organizations on track as we pursued the integration.
Yeah, we will get more into that and the details of how you guys were able to successfully do that and continue to successfully do it right after our first break. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
We're back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM at clay1180.com and excellentcultures.com with Scott Harrison, who is giving us an amazing description of a merger that took place between two competitors and resulted in a really neat culture in a world where typically where mergers and acquisitions take place, rarely is culture even a consideration, or let's say if it is, it's the last consideration. And Scott's been telling us about when they decided to, you know, merge these two formerly competitive firms, that the culture of the company and what had been built on both sides was a primary consideration, you know, in the process, and how the fruit of that, you know, decision and all that hard work has turned into some, you know, real valuable outcomes. Scott, tell us some more about, you know, any particular tips that you might give to other firms who are considering a merger or an acquisition or, you know, synergizing two organizations that typically flow in a different, you know, or two teams that flow in a different frame of reference. What should they be watching for, and what should they look to do if, in fact, their goal is, you know, the higher performance of the, you know, two entities working together?
Right. So a couple of things pop to my mind. One is one of clear definitions. For people that spend time with this that, you know it certainly better than I do, we are pretty specific as what do we mean by culture and what do we really mean by values and how are they, you know, part of an integrated, you know, solution or model, if you will, with alignment around the vision statements and the mission statements. And in our world, culture was kind of like, how do we do things around here? How do we want to hold ourselves accountable for doing things around here? What are the customs, attitudes, etiquette, the effect on how people interact with each other? And you can imagine that both organizations, because of their longevity, had a history as to what they, which each one of us was calling culture. So we had to determine a way to successfully, you know, merge, you know, that those two histories and those elements together. And then the values, we differentiated a little bit with more like the essence of the company, the core of the company, almost the soul, the spirit of the organization, you know, kind of a values that help provide answers to hard questions in the interaction with people. And it helped to really have a clear definition to help people get their arms and their brains around what we were trying to define and really articulate. And then we've all been involved in the writing, if you will, the articulation and vision and mission statements. And when we see them, they ultimately, you know, seem like they make a great deal of sense and, you know, pretty much matter-of-fact, straightforward statements. But we all know to get there an awful lot takes an incredible amount of time, give and take, you know, trade-offs and whatnot. And so we spent time, again, going back to the basics and looking at both vision statements and mission statements, and trying to come up with new statements, and involve the total population. This wasn't just the leadership team in the back room for half a day or whatever else, and then coming out with templates. This took place over many, many weeks, in fact, months, and involved the departments and the organization and population throughout to have inputs to this. So that was important, clear definitions and the linkage to vision and mission. And I think one other thing that kind of sticks in my mind, and we're all familiar with the Tuckman model of team formation, and gosh, we've used it so much, the forming and, storming and norming and performing of teams. Well, you can imagine doing something like this. You have that challenge of that team building, that process of getting to a high-performing team, both at the organizational level, at the top level with the business model, and then you can break it down and say you would have it within, given departments, and then you would have it in project teams or form and fold teams, this building of this model, if you will, to get to high-performing. And so we were really clear with people the importance of this endeavor was ultimately going to get to a high-performing organization, and within that organization, high-performance teams, which in fact would be able to offer products and services that would exceed client expectations. So those are a couple of things that we jumped on pretty quickly in the process.
Yeah, those are huge. So what I hear you saying, to kind of reemphasize for our listeners, is number one, what's your definition of culture? If you don't have the same definition, everybody talks about culture, but rarely do you find folks that define it the same way. And then how about, is the mission still the same? Is the vision still the same? Are the values still the same? And then all the conversation that took place, I hear you say, around every single employee. Typically when clients contact us, it's not because... at Excellent Cultures, it's not because they have a lousy culture and they need help. Most of those folks don't even realize that culture is a problem. It's excellent companies who are, have a good culture and have built a good culture and have done the mission, vision, values work like you're talking about, Scott. But they're looking for, moving from good to great. What's the next level for us? How do we hone it? How do we refine it? And typically, when we utilize our scientific instruments to be able to measure what's really going on in a culture, below the surface, the things that people may not feel comfortable talking about, around a conference table, but would to a close friend, over a cup of coffee or over a beer, when it was a
are these whining conversations?
Well, some of them could be, but I would think that if we did that exercise with a company like OpenSquare, that what the data would show is that there's lots of good communication and lots of clearly defined values and missions and everything else, and that the windows, the subtle windows of opportunity for the next level, are in the things that that aren't discussed or didn't get talked about or nobody asked the right question to talk to them about, and it's in those answers. But again, rarely do firms get to that level. Usually, if in fact they have good levels of performance, they stop. And then what Scott just said, that the end that they began with is they wanted high performance team. They wanted a team that would, run circles around competitors and not just a lot of happy people standing around holding hands, singing kumbaya. That's what a great culture is. So, great insight, Scott. So in your experience, and in the years that you've been at this and studied it and watched it, what have you seen that are some of the the challenges, or where cultures, good cultures, start to deteriorate? What are the trouble signs that leaders should watch out for?
Well, I guess a couple of things would pop into my mind. You mentioned leadership, where I think it could decelerate, if you will, over a period of time is. It's certainly if there's a change in leadership of an organization or the business model changes, and what's hopefully turned from what has been a solid, understandable, recognized culture, maybe doesn't even get lip service because it's overcome by, you know, a series of other, you know, business events. So one of the things that I've always looked for in organizations where, you know, I've had a leadership position is that's one of my top MBOs, is to be the keeper, you know, of the culture through the organization and the leadership, where you continue measure how you're doing with the attributes that you define. You recognize performance and you recognize examples of where culture is being implemented, and particularly in an extraordinary aspect. You have both an internal and an external focus, because culture hopefully drives the business model, so you're successful externally and, you know, growing your business, as you say, or capturing market share. But a major portion of it is that leadership team, CEO, COO, department heads feeling responsibility for culture. And you can drive it a little bit further and say, in your strategic planning, is culture and sitting captured in your business plan? We all have different business plans, and there are different components that make up business plans. And you have your financials, and you have your operational characteristics, and you have your sales, and, you know, all kinds of different buckets, if you will. But empowered there, that's something that transcends horizontally across the organization, is culture. And so I've always held myself accountable, and we're doing the same thing here in the new company with the leadership team, accountable for, you know, not just going through an exercise and defining culture, but then living it, recognizing it, and rewarding it.
What an amazing way to describe it. You know, measure. You know, measure. So many companies don't measure, or if they measure, all they measure is, you know, the warm and fuzzy stuff, surface-level conversations, not the deep things that tell us, you know, do we have salespeople who are getting more emotional gratification out of beating each other than they are, you know, beating the competition, where you end up, if that isn't addressed and dealt with, you end up with a whole bunch of sneaky corporate politics and backstabbing. Or do we have, you know, has a yes person culture, you know, emerged where people are just head nodding and smiling and giving smiley faces and thumbs up, you know, to the bosses, or are they really owning it? And I loved what you just said about this, you know, perspective, Scott, is that is the leadership team really feeling responsibility for culture, or is it just another thing on the list of many items that kind of get discussed casually around the day-to-day operations of running the business?
Right. I mean, you have, for an example, and that's why these definitions, you know, to me have always been important, because there is gray area in these things. There's no doubt about it. Sometimes you can throw out an adjective or a noun, and is that a, you know, cultural deal or is it a value deal? You know, take an example, exceeding expectations. Is that part of the culture or is that a value? Accountability, is that culture of accountability or is that a value, you know, of accountability? So you really have to be, you know, clear on what these definitions are. But this measurement and this feedback, you know, works both ways. Just the other day, we had a very, very nice win here in the company, and there was a celebration with the announcement as to the significance of this win, both because of the client and the size of it, which is really, really nice. Well, we'll spend some time to go back and really tear that apart and say, well, why did we win that? What were the major components over a period of time that we did differently than our competitors did, which differentiated us in the marketplace to be successful? And then the corollary to that is, you know, we've lost some. You know, everybody loses some. And so many times, you know, in organizations, you know, that's too bad, that's, you know, horrific, we didn't really understand the client or whatever it might have been. But to your point, it might have been at the, you know, at the higher level and not really a deep dive. Well, we'll try and use those examples as well to do a deep dive, because you can certainly learn as much from when you're not successful as you do when you are successful. But it takes that, again, that commitment and ownership to find the time to go through that kind of analysis and then translate the takeaways from that into action, so you don't have a repetitive event out there.
Right. We got to go into our second break of the show, but we are with Scott Harrison, and we will be right back. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com.
Excellent. ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at ExcellentCultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
We're back with Biz Culture Matters and ExcellentCultures.com, talking to Scott Harrison of Open Square about the difference between a good culture and a great culture, and how you merge two excellent companies together and end up with a byproduct that actually takes advantage of synergies. Before the break, Scott was talking about the importance and the criticality of measurement, and measuring the right things. And he was really talking about the importance and criticality of leadership truly taking heartfelt ownership in responsibility, for culture, not just paying it lip service. We put up an instrument that any of you can take advantage of at excellentcultures.com/bizculturemri, excellentcultures.com/bizculturemri, BIZCULTUREMRI. If you go there, you can do a 7-minute assessment of your culture online, no charge, no marketing, just a value add to take a look at your culture and assess it from, the framework of what Scott is talking about here. And, what Scott is sharing with us is that, if you're not measuring your culture, if you're not really taking a look at it and breaking it down into the elements of why did successes happen and why did we miss some versus why did we hit some, then those are some of the criteria that make a difference between, a mediocre culture and a good culture, or a good culture and a great culture.
That's a powerful tool, Steve, to be able to do that. We do something similar with a 15-minute online Q&A for leadership with clients, too, as to how do customers use their space as efficiently and effectively as possible, and how does the vision for their space take into account utilizing technology, collaboration, teamwork, form and fold, attraction and retention, and it gives them kind of like a look in the mirror as to where they are and compare that to where they want to try and go to, and it's just a great, both learning and a tool for action, to help you go in the right direction.
So, Scott, let's go back for a second to one of the things that you shared before the break, various components assessing, whether they were a part of the culture or a part of the values. And one of the examples you used was exceeding expectations. How does a leader who's looking to build a great culture, an excellent culture, differentiate between, culture and values, for example?
Well, a good question. And honestly, I think, like I said earlier, I think there's some gray, area in these things, because I can do the same thing. I can almost put them under one column versus the other, and talk about them. But the one that you use on exceeding expectations, in our world, we would probably address that literally in both components.
Both the value and the culture.
Absolutely. Because a culture of exceeding expectations sends a message out to the entire organization that doing a good job is okay, but doing a good job doesn't necessarily, and in many cases, won't win you the business. You really have to knock the client's socks off. You have to do something, you know, exceptional. You really have to, you know, do that exceeding expectations. And so not only is that a culture, but that is a value that you can hold yourself accountable for. And we have CRM tools and measurement tools that, you know, help the clients rate, you know, our performance in any given project. So we, you know, we can take that value or cultural statement, and then going back to our earlier conversation, translate it into measures, and then what are the actions that come out of those measures?
Yeah, that's phenomenal. Translating it into measures and the outcomes that, you know, come out of a measure. Again, you know, just these critical components that so many companies, regardless of their size. I mean, I've talked to Fortune 500 companies who spend, you know, millions and billions, tens of millions of dollars in some cases, sometimes billions of dollars on missions and values and communications, and they're measuring everything, but they're not measuring what Scott's talking about.
Right.
You know, they're measuring the wrong things. And, you know, when you look at the difference between actually generating a culture that isn't just good values, but it's one that performs at at peak performance, there can essentially be a significant difference.
Right. You know, it's really interesting, too, is that one of the key words, if you will, that we always address is trust. And how important is trust? Well, is trust, you know, part of the culture, or is it a value? That's another one that could probably easily fit, you know, into both kinds of descriptions there. But I just saw, about a week or so ago, Phyllis Campbell from J.P. Morgan Chase was speaking at Downtown Rotary, and she was talking about leadership in today's dynamic business and environment. And she covered two or three different aspects. And one that sticks in my mind that Phyllis mentioned was the ever-increasing accountability for exceptional performance on the part of both organizations and people within those organizations. And one of the organizations that she mentioned was the Edelman Corporation that does that trust barometer. And Phyllis's data, you know, showed that trust and transparency were probably the two key components out of a list of 10 or 12 that other organizations and other people would consider in whether or not to do business with an organization. And that's an interesting read. I'm sure a lot of your listeners, you know, are probably familiar with the, you know, with the Edelman, you know, barometer.
Yep.
But it was that trust and transparency that really, really drove it. And I don't, we all kind of know that. It's kind of common sense. But how do you keep that alive in your conversations, you know, around your culture and your values and your vision statement? And and we've incorporated it into ours, so we never lose, you never lose focus of how important that trust and confidence is in gaining that from your clients.
Yeah, well, we just heard you say that you've incorporated in so that you never lose confidence. And yet we've had leader after leader on the show, great leaders, you know, who talk to us about that same thing, that, you know, it's maintaining and sustaining the, you know, the culture of excellence, the high performance culture is so very, very critical. And yet at the same time, with today's focus on, you know, the surface numbers, you know, the quarterly reports, the, you know, costs, the revenues, you know, what are sales this month versus last month, that it's so easy to get lost in that focus and forget about what really matters, which is why we got into business in the first place, you know, to serve our customers, and then as a leader to serve the people who serve our customers. What Scott is talking to you about, I hear, is very, very key components to not just developing an excellent culture, but sustaining one.
Right.
It's not just something you do and then it's an event and it goes away.
Right. Well, it's so much on the front of, you know, I think, of all our business landscapes right now, and, you know, what we're seeing out there in the marketplace. I just, you know, picked up the other day the recent issue of the Harvard Business Review that's out there. And if you haven't seen it, Steve, you got to take a look at it, because the cover story is A Great Place to Work.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath that, it's kind of like it says, what IDEO, BlackRock, and Netflix know about building high-performance cultures. And I'm really familiar with IDEO. I don't know if they're in the Bay Area. They're probably one of the most recognized worldwide leaders leader in creative design across a variety of market applications. And they used to have a strategic relationship with our major manufacturing partner, Steelcase. But the Kelly brothers that run IDEO have developed a process called the deep dive to really explore how to get deep into things so you're not just operating on the surface. And as you read in the HBR review, they'll talk again about, you know, the importance of trust and transparency, and they make a big deal out of what they call the culture of helping. And in their organization, one of the key operating norms and one of the key cultural aspects is helping each other out vertically, horizontally. There's no pecking order on this kind of a deal. And you're almost not doing your job if you're not looking out and really trying to be transparent in your organization and asking for help. It's absolutely fascinating stuff.
Yeah, outstanding. So just a few months ago, Gallup released the most recent employee engagement poll. And dismal news, in 2 years from the previous poll to now, in the United States, our culture of disengaged workers, 70% of American workers still say that they are disengaged at work. The local Cairo News affiliate actually interpreted that as, you know, people hating their jobs, which is not exactly what the survey said. We're going to take a break in a second, but when we get back, we want to be able to get insights from Scott on the connection between engaged workers and a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement.
You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. Don't forget, if you got a question for our guest or Excellent Cultures, send us an email at asktheexperts@ExcellentCultures.com. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
We're back on Biz Culture Matters, Clay 1180, clay1180.com AM, and Excellent Cultures at excellentcultures.com with Scott Harrison of the Open Square organization talking to us about cultures of engagement and ethics and values. And we were talking before the break about the recent Gallup poll that has employees in American companies that, you know, a workforce of 70% disengaged employees. This year, there was a new statistic that actually identified that 18% of those disengaged workers said, in fact, that they hated their job, and their most common reason for hating their job was they hated their boss, and that people didn't perceive themselves so much as working for a company as they did working for a boss. And then the Gallup CEO, Jim Clifton, went on to, in his cover memo for the report, allude to this generation of what he called managers from hell, who have emerged that are, you know, doing their fair share at contributing to this disengaged
workforce.
Wish
we had a sound effect.
Yeah,
for that.
Yeah, because it's you know, it's pretty powerful language. So Scott, tell us, you know, in your opinion, what's the connection between employee engagement and a culture of ethics and values, and how do we cope with this generation of managers from hell that Mr. Clifton is speaking about?
Yeah, well, a couple of things come to mind. I think one again comes back to this: the incorporation of trust and transparency. To your point, Steve, things are moving so quickly these days. They're more complex. You know, first time to market is key. Expediting performance and deliverables are key. And sometimes it can very easily, you know, rush your business model as to whether you are or not, you know, delivering, you know, those higher than expected expectations, you know, for your clients. So it's in this really quick market and business environment that we find ourselves in. A couple things stick out in my mind. Number one is integrity. Any organization and the people within the organization, if they don't feel like they're dealing from a baseline of integrity, it's just a matter of time before things go upside down. And so how do you continue to measure and how do you continue to promote integrity? Well, I think it comes back again towards recognizing, you know, really good things that organizations do, really good things that people within organizations do, being an active participant in the community. We could have a whole other discussion on, you know, philanthropy and community corporate citizenship involvement, which really drives, you know, an organization's visibility in the marketplace. But integrity is so important. And I think just I just read an interesting, I think it's a new magazine that just came out. It was called Live Happy. I never heard of it before, Live Happy. And it had a great story on there about the corporations and how to live happy and the importance of living happy, if you will, in an organization. And it made the point that meaning in your job, meaning in what you do, and service to others is an essential element of a well-lived life. And really drives how people will or won't perform in an organization. And in fact, I went back and mentioned another Harvard Business Review last year on the value of happiness and how it, you know, really drives profit. So I think this, you know, holding ourselves accountable for the highest level of integrity, having some excitement where you recognize really neat things that are being accomplished, like I say, in an organization. Have you have some passion and some excitement and energy around the vision statement and mission statement, and really come back and continue to revisit those and share events with the clients and with your in-house constituents, just goes a long way to continue to build that trust and the higher ethical standard, and I think gets people, you know, more engaged. It's not enough now just to be good enough. People want to be part of something special.
Yeah.
And that has to permeate throughout the entire organization.
Yeah, full out. We had one of the guests that we've had on the show recently, Alan Pratt of Pratt Legacy Advisors, was giving us some input on, you know, his perspective of, you know, imagine the difference between, you know, a day that you have at work where, you know, your energy is through the ceiling, you come home exhausted physically, but so excited that, you know, you can't go to sleep and you wake up 2 hours early the next morning and can hardly wait to get to work. That's what an engaged workforce looks like. And, you know, so infrequently do we see that, you know, in today's work environments. So, and a big piece of the puzzle, you know, what we hear Scott telling us is that, you know, trust and integrity are a big piece of that. So most every major corporation that has invested, you know, and most all have, in, you know, in the exercise of defining their values, and they've got them published on their websites in beautiful goal frames, and the challenge, as you know, is not writing them, it's living them, you know, have this beautiful word, integrity. Scott, any insights on how one would measure integrity?
Well, again, I think that, you know, the ultimate measure, lots of different ways internally can certainly be, you know, your through HR and through your departments and, you know, turnover or lack of turnover, you know, of people in the organization, because people are going to stay where they really feel valued and they really feel excited and they're energized because they feel like they're, you know, part of something special. So you have that somewhat subjective but an internal measurement. From an external perspective, like, again, are you growing your business? Are you capturing market share? Those are pretty tangible measures that we can come up with. And sooner or later, if you're not representing or if you don't have the highest level of integrity in an organization, it will come out in one way or another, and it will have an impact on those kinds of growth and market share objectives. And I mentioned, Steve, the other one, too, is that we live in such a wonderful community here. Seattle and the Northwest is just a giving environment, and there's ample opportunity for organizations to be involved in, you know, helping others with, I think we have something like 15,000 not-for-profits in the state of Washington, but whether it's education or whether it's housing or whether it's healthcare or whether it's, you know, the arts or whatever it might be, you know, the high-integrity organizations usually find a way to give back to their communities.
They're giving back. So we're down to like our last 2 minutes on the show, Scott. Take for a few seconds and put your coaching hat on and give leaders who are listening, your advice. You know, what would a coach who's done this for a number of years and put two companies together successfully and been a part of a number of visionary collaborative, you know, cultural-based, you know, initiatives, what advice can you give to folks here in the last 2 minutes of the show of how to maximize their performance through a great culture?
Well, I think one of the key ones that to mention very quickly is this culture of embracing change. You know, that's another word that's tossed around an awful lot. But I used to love the Jack Welch quote. It went something like, if change is taking place faster on the outside than it is on the inside, the end is in view. And so there's a tremendous amount of opportunity there to embrace change, because that's what we all have to do in a marketplace that is getting more and more complex and it's quicker and quicker and quicker. So my advice would be to continue to revisit the basics. When you spend the time to really define your vision, mission, value, operating norms, beliefs, and so they do go on your webpage, and they do go sometimes go on your stationery, but recognize them, reward them, be very, very vocal about them, you know, put a high degree of energy, you know, around them. And when I say, I mean people in the organization. Some of the best stories we get are, you know, based on, you know, what comes out of our people out on the front lines, you know, installing product, you know, providing the service, and we get these wonderful feedbacks from clients about what they've done that's been extraordinary. Well, that's the kind of stuff that I think fuels imagination and excitement, for people that we all want to have in our organization. So culture is real. Values, you know, are certainly real. And the trick is, I think, again, align them with your vision and mission statement, and then put a lot of energy behind it, recognize it, and reward it, and then just keep on trucking.
Thanks so much, Scott. We this time went by flying fast.
Well, it's fun talking with you guys.
Yeah, you know, the feedback that you have shared is just essential. Great job on both the subject of building high performance culture and, you know, how to do a merger the right way.
Well, thanks, Steve. Jack, we'll see you soon, I'm
sure. We'll talk soon, yeah. Hey, okay. Guys, check out OpenSquare, open-sq.com, and it's more than office furniture. It's office environment.
All right, go Hawks.
Go check it out.
Go Hawks.
All right, guys, you listen to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We will see you next week. Check out excellentcultures.com. Bye-bye. Okay.